Amy Eddingson for Brian Lehrer, thanks so much for tuning in this morning. Joining me now is Nafisa Hoodboy. She was the only woman reporter in the 1980s under the military dictatorship of General Zia in Pakistan. She went on to cover the nation's transition to democracy in the late 80s and 90s. She moved to the United States just before September 11th, 2001, and continues to work as a journalist here. She has written a new book called Aboard the Democracy Train, A Journey Through Pakistan's Last Decade of Democracy. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
You covered the rise of Benazir Bhutto's rise to power after General Zia-ul-Haq was killed in a plane crash in 1988. You were assigned by your paper, Pakistan's largest English daily language daily, Dawn, to cover her campaign, which was dubbed the Democracy Train. What was that like for you as a young woman reporter?
It was very exciting. I mean, the fact is that for the first time, a woman was poised to become Prime Minister of Pakistan. And given the fact that I was the only woman reporter at that time at Dawn newspaper, the largest English language daily, it was really exciting and unimaginable to think that a woman could come to power. And I was deputed to cover her, and I rode with her on the train, which is actually the theme for my book. And you see that on the cover and the image as well.
Yeah, yeah. And did being a woman help you in terms of access to Benazir Bhutto, in terms of the stories you were able to cover, or did it get in your way?
I would say at that stage, given, you know, the fact that Pakistan is a sex-segregated society, it was hugely helpful to be a woman because she confided in me. She said things to me perhaps that she couldn't have said to other folks. And I did think that I had a privilege as a woman.
When you see the Arab Spring and the budding democracies in Egypt, Tunisia, and Yemen, are you hopeful?
Actually, I think that it's difficult to compare the Arab countries with Pakistan. Pakistan is still in a very complex phase of its evolution. There is a military that's still firmly entrenched, and as such, you don't have the same sort of freedom. And even though there is a civilian government, it's not really been able to function because the military is so much in power.
Let's talk about the news coming out of Pakistan today. The interior minister says that Pakistan will ask Interpol to arrest ex-president Pervez Musharraf for his failure to prevent former Prime Minister Bhutto's assassination in 2007. Why is this happening now, as Musharraf is in exile?
Well, the fact is that Musharraf would like to come back to power. The only thing is that he's been thoroughly discredited inside Pakistan. And it's very ironic that this type of Interpol warrant is coming out at this stage, because this is precisely the thing that Musharraf himself did when he wanted to prevent Benazir Bhutto from returning to Pakistan. In fact, I was with Benazir at that stage when that Interpol warrant was issued. So Interpol warrants are generally political, you know, things that are used at certain stages to rein in politicians. They may have very little to do with the actual cases against a particular politician. They are more of a political mechanism to rein in the politician at that stage.
Last week, Afghan President Hamid Karzai went to Pakistan to discuss face-to-face peace talks with the Taliban. Can you explain the dynamic here between Afghanistan and Pakistan with respect to the Taliban? Who's closest to the Taliban?
I would say that Pakistan never really let go of the Taliban. The fact of the matter is that Pakistan was an unwilling ally of the United States after 9/11. And even though it ostensibly sided with the U.S., it kept its hand on the Afghan Taliban. As such, even Hamid Karzai at this stage recognizes that without Pakistan's cooperation, there can be no peace settlement in Afghanistan, meaning because Pakistan has such a strong upper hand over the Afghan Taliban, Karzai has to come to Pakistan to get its cooperation on that issue.
And yet Pakistan is denying that it has any control over these Taliban leaders. Karzai wants Pakistan's help in delivering these Taliban leaders to the bargaining table. Pakistan is saying, what, us? Come to us? So what's the possible resolution here for these peace talks that Karzai wants?
Well, the fact of the matter is that the United States itself has been negotiating with the Taliban. Right now, the Taliban are a hot commodity, given their resilience.
Everybody wants to dance with the Taliban.
Given their resilience, and the fact is that they never really went away. In 2001, they receded into the backwaters of Pakistan. They formed the Quetta Shura. The Haqqani network continued to exist in Pakistan. So the United States, Afghanistan, Pakistan, each one of them wants to have an upper hand, and the Taliban are feeling very strong and have their own way.
What are the stakes for Pakistan in these peace talks? What do they gain and what do they lose if Afghanistan comes to some peace agreement with the Taliban?
Well, the fact of the matter is that if the Taliban do return to power, Pakistan looks at Afghanistan as an outpost, meaning that because of the close nexus between the Pashtuns who live in the north of Pakistan and the Pashtuns who actually formed the Taliban, Pakistan would have greater leverage in terms of the type of government that would exist in Afghanistan. And as you know, that Pakistan and India have always been at odds with each other. Consequently, the concept of strategic depth goes into play, and consequently, Pakistan would feel stronger vis-a-vis India, given a stronger pro-Taliban Afghanistan.
After the clash in November that resulted in 24 dead Pakistani soldiers, the United States' diplomatic relationship with Pakistan has been essentially frozen. How can the U.S. restore a strategic diplomatic relationship with Pakistan now, after that clash, after the Osama bin Laden operation, and after the drone strikes? Remind us why the U.S. needs Pakistan and why Pakistan needs us.
Well, the fact of the matter is that prior to 2001, Afghanistan actually became a breeding ground for the Al-Qaeda movement. And if Afghanistan continues to become a failed state, and if it's taken over by the Taliban, this is going to be disastrous, not only for the United States, but for the whole world, and particularly for its neighbors. I do believe that a weak Afghanistan with the Al-Qaeda firmly entrenched there will be a disaster for Pakistan, because the biggest blowback has happened in the last 10 years and will, in fact, continue to be on Pakistan, given its proximity to Afghanistan.
Pakistan is the deadliest country for journalists for the second year in a row. At least 46 journalists were killed in 2011. The Committee to Protect Journalists said today. Do you see yourself going back to Pakistan and working as a journalist there again?
I absolutely do, because of the fact that, you know, I'm rooted in Pakistan, and these threats and these attacks do not deter me. The only thing is that one has to be much more careful in the way that one proceeds in that country. I myself was a victim of an attack back in the 90s. But the fact of the matter is that if one wants to pursue meaningful journalism, one has to be at the source. And that actually has become the basis for my book as well, to try to actually relate the reality of Pakistan and not look at it from the outside and purely as an observer.
Well, my hat's off to you and to your work and to all your effort. And if you do journey back to Pakistan, good luck.
Thank you so much.
You can see Nafisa Hoodboy in conversation with Professor Henry Carey and WNYC's own Karen Frillman tonight at McNally Jackson Bookstore in New York City at 7 o'clock tonight. Nafisa Hoodboy is the author of the book, The Democracy Train, Aboard the Democracy Train, A Journey Through Pakistan's Last Decade of Democracy. Thanks again for joining us here on WNYC.
Thank you so much.
The Brian Lehrer Show continues. Stay tuned.